Women are changing hockey, and for the last time this season, we're here to talk about it. This is Chell Chit Chat, and I'm your host, Liz Hood. Today is the 10th and final episode of season one of this podcast. It has been so fun going through this journey with everyone, and I am stoked that this is our final episode. Well, not stoked that it's the final one, but I'm so stoked about what we're going to talk about. Today's topic of how to tell stories with data is something that, if you know me, you know is very near and dear to my heart. I love data in hockey more than I love probably anything, and I think it actually irritates a lot of the people around me. I find that there are so many fascinating conversations you can have about this particular topic, and today's episode with Shayna Goldman of The Athletic is no different. We are going to talk about kind of the emergence of more advanced data tracking in hockey, and how you can use data to become more informed in hockey if that's what you want to do, and just the most effective ways to use data and analytics and video to defend a point, craft a compelling argument, and all that amazing stuff. Before we get started, I do just want to say thank you so much to everyone who has tuned into this season so far. It has been a wild but incredibly fun ride, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I am so glad that you're here for episode 10 with Shayna Goldman. So without further ado, let's talk about how to tell stories with data. Welcome everyone to, oh my gosh, the final episode of season one of Chell Chit Chat. I am so psyched that Shayna's here with me today to talk all things data in hockey, but I am so sad that this season is almost over, but I chose this particular episode to be the last one for the season for a very, very specific reason, that being this topic is something I am so passionate about, and Shayna is one of my favorite people to talk about hockey with in the space, so I think that this is an amazing way to sum up all of the conversations. Shayna Goldman, how are you doing today?
Oh my god, I am great. I'm so glad to be doing this. I love this whole series. I'm so happy to be a part of it.
Ah, well, it is such an honor to have you here, and I'm so excited to have this conversation. I should have put, like, an elastic on my wrist or something to, like, remind me to, like, snap it to calm down when we start getting into some of these topics. I think it's something you and I are both very passionate about, and I have so much to learn from you about it. So, very excited that everyone is here to learn alongside us today. So, why don't you just get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself, kind of give everyone the rundown on who you are, kind of what you do.
Okay, so I'm a writer. I write about hockey. And it's fun to say hockey just as a whole now, because I do get to chip into the women's game a bit. I focus more on data-driven journalism and using videos and numbers to break down my convoluted points. I do, you know, analysis first. I'm definitely not a reporter. And I think it's fun to get to explore the game in long form. To me, analysis is just shit talking. So that is what I try to do and have some fun with it. And yeah, so I write, and then you get to hear me talk nonsense like this on the Too Many Men podcast. And then, you know, on the side, I'm a big crafter, so I've been upcycling a lot of NHL gear.
That's so amazing. I feel like all the different areas that hockey can just be so cool and so innovative, kind of, you cover all of that. And the upcycle stuff is just such a cool thing. I love every single time you post a new vest you made, a jacket, some cool hoodie you've turned into something. Oh my gosh, it's so cool. I actually have my very own Hey Shay piece in my closet, a Winnipeg Jets vest that I got made for the whiteout parties last year that was so, so cool. It's one of my favorite pieces, and I get so many compliments every single time I wear it. So definitely, little plug, check out Shayna's, well, Etsy shop, but also, like, you post about it on social media and stuff too. You can see all the different pieces, and, you know, there are some logos that personally I would never dare wear on my chest or anything like that, but the pieces are real cool anyway. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the hockey space and kind of what you are passionate about in hockey?
I did not think I would be doing this. I went to college originally for journalism and political science. I wanted to be a speechwriter, and I wanted to write poli-sci for the New York Times. That was the goal. And like a month into it, I hated it. So I quit journalism right there. So that's why, like, I don't have a journalistic background in any which way. And I didn't think I would be here. I switched gears and went into business, actually. And was going to go to grad school for accounting. And, like, just by chance, my sister was going to NYU at the time. And they were at her orientation, and there was a table for, like, a sports business grad program there. So I applied to it by chance, because it was like, you should really give it a shot. And I got in, and I went there, and I was like, all right, screw it. I'm going to try to pursue sports. But even then, I still thought, I would be doing it from a business standpoint. Like, that is what I intended. Like, whether I was a researcher, which is what I really wanted to be, or work in sports accounting in some capacity. And I started writing as an internship, and it just kind of like evolved from there. Every single thing along the way that I didn't want to do, I did, because I at first wanted to write outside of the game, the rule changes, technology aspect of it, not writing about teams and not writing about the Rangers specifically because I thought it would ruin things for me. So I started bouncing around writing about different things, and somehow along the way started writing about the Rangers specifically, and that kind of took off for me. But I knew I didn't want to write about one team, and especially not that team. But yeah, like it was things like that, like just trying different things. Every time I said I didn't want to try something, I tried it, and it, in a roundabout way, did work itself out. And along the way, there were like data projects, like Ryan Stimson was doing the passing project, I think it was called. So you were passing shot, tracking shot assists, watching games, and doing that. So I did that for a little bit too, which got me more into that sphere of it all, and just kept going, and here I am.
That's amazing. I think that's so important to listen to as like kind of a piece of advice. You know, everything you didn't want to do, you did, and you tried it. And I think that's really important. There are so many angles, especially in the sports space, that like you can say, I want to take this narrow path. And then in choosing that, you're not just ignoring the paths that you do know about, you're also ignoring the paths you don't know about. And I feel like there are so many paths people don't know about in sports. So I love that. And I think, well, clearly you're in a great space for what you're willing and able to do, because the work that you create over at The Athletic is super, super informative. So why don't you tell us a little bit about working at The Athletic and kind of what your specific role is, what sorts of articles you write specifically for The Athletic and The New York Times?
So originally, I was just a part-time writer focusing on New York teams, primarily the Rangers, and occasionally dipping my toes into the Islanders, because I, you know, as it was, I was already watching a bunch of different teams because I think you need to get better perspective. And the fact that I wasn't like a day-to-day beat writer or something, I feel like you have to be looking so narrowly at things. And the fact that I wasn't, it helped me learn a little bit more about the game that way. And I also started writing fantasy hockey. Allison Lucan and I were approached to do that together, and neither of us had experience writing about fantasy hockey. Like, I had played it but never written about it. So I started doing that, and then over time, my position there changed. I became a full-time writer, I think, after like 4 years or so being part-time. And originally, it was in this like hybrid role, writing national stuff and about the Devils. And then that became just a national role now, which is what I'm doing. So I get to write about a little bit of everything. It's nice because sometimes you want to write those big national pieces, like who is the best defenseman in the league, and let's break down the Norris Trophy. But sometimes it's fun, you know, to write about, say, the Washington Capitals from a national perspective, because you might look at things differently than the people who are so ingrained in the day-to-day. So that's what I try to do.
I think that's really important. And I want you to build on that a little bit, because I find that, you know, I'm pretty hyper focused on the team that I cover, and I find that I get to know the players and their system so intimately because I watch their games, you know, one, two, or maybe sometimes even three times, and then, you know, get to talk to the players and the coaches afterwards, ask them the specific questions. But then I feel like I'm also missing kind of the added context of watching, you know, well, specifically Eastern Conference hockey. I don't watch nearly as much as maybe I would like to. But then also, if I were to only watch, you know, try and watch every game every night and watch them from a little bit more of a high level perspective, I feel like I would miss some of the key details that I really like learning about. And how do you kind of balance getting that full league context, but also still getting that in-depth, nitty-gritty intimacy with the teams?
It's really hard. I know, like I was texting Allison Lucan when the Rangers were playing the Kraken, and she's noticing these key details and texting me them, and I'm like, I don't know how you see that. But then again, when you're so ingrained in the day-to-day, like you know it like the back of your hand, as you should, right? Like that is your job, that's your specialty. And so for me, it helps that, you know, at The Athletic we have a million writers for all different teams. So it helps to read their work and also ask questions. If you have questions, it could be as simple as sending a text out being like, hey, why did they originally put Brodin and Spurgeon back together, and sending that to Mike Russo and being like, just give me the context because I know what happened, but why I might have missed. Like, did you write about that, or can you just give me that quick hit? It helps too. Like, I think asking questions is so important because we're not all going to be experts on everything, but there are people who are that we can lean on, and I think that's a great thing to have. But a big way is just one, reading everything you can. Like you get up in the morning, you're having your coffee, like go through and read every single thing you can. I have a reading list that is so long for the stuff I can't catch up on immediately, and I try to just see what everybody's writing, because not only do you learn about the team, but you also, I think, maybe especially for me, for not having a journalism background, like it's nice to see how other people go about it and you can learn from it that way. The other part of it is I watch a ton of hockey. That is what I do. And it's tough to know sometimes what is the game to watch, right? Like how do you pick based on the schedule? If I have a writing schedule already and I know, like, okay, I'm writing something about Celebrini, I'm going to focus on the Sharks for the next 5 games and be really deep into that. Like, that is one thing. But sometimes you just have to bounce around and try to see what might be interesting. And, during the intermissions, and it helps that the one time it helps that the NHL schedule, everyone goes to intermission at once. You can try to take that whip around and start looking through. For me, I'll open up every tab on Natural Stat Trick and start looking through, see what's interesting, see if anything stands out, and then maybe go that route. And if I miss a game, I will watch it afterwards, a condensed version of it, the entire thing. The next morning, I am sitting here watching replays of the games that I missed to just stay up to date. I don't know how else to do it besides just watching a ton of it.
One day, the NHL is going to create a good and proper red zone, and you are going to be the person that they have to consult for it to get that locked in
Please.
again. When
I
it
just want to
comes.
help. I just want to help plan. Just help, let me help you plan it, which nights to run it, because it doesn't need to be a nightly thing. The schedule could be rebalanced in so many ways. And I'm a very bitter person about the NHL schedule. If anybody follows me, they know I talk about it constantly. I applied for that job while I was still in grad school and did not get it, obviously, because I was not experienced enough for it. So when I see the scheduling look as bad, I'm like, I wish I could be the one managing this.
Well, I think you would do an exceptional job. So who knows? Maybe one day I'll keep my eye out for that. And one day, maybe I won't necessarily know. Maybe you'll be moving in secret, but then I'm gonna see the schedule nice and staggered, have the red zone. I'm like, ah, yes, that has Shayna's
There it
handprints
is. There it
all
is.
over it.
Starts on the half hour. Who knew?
Exactly. When it comes to the more like league-wide pieces and stuff like that that you write, how much creative freedom do you get in, choosing the topics, or are they kind of assigned to you? Like you said, okay, Macklin Celebrini, like that's something that, would probably balance a little bit of, I'm sure there's huge demand for it, but also you'd be interested in doing it as well. And kind of where do the specific stories that you write come from?
A lot of them is just my ideas. Occasionally my editor will come to me and be like, hey, we want to see something on this. Like, I think last year it was Alex Ovechkin, like, why wasn't he scoring goals? Like, that was a story that I think Myrtle had suggested someone wrote, and then it got passed down to me basically. It's like, do you want to write about this? And I'm like, let's go. I'm very eager. If someone has an idea for me, like, I want to go with it. Sometimes people have questions and that'll like inspire me. And the rest of it's me. Like, I, as I'm watching games, I'm taking notes throughout them about different ideas, different things you might see. It might be watching, earlier this year, the Red Wings penalty kill, and I'm like, this is a disaster. And then as I wrote my monthly column, I looked deeper into the numbers and immediately was like, this, I can write 300 words here, but this deserves its own thing. So I knew I could like spin that into something bigger. And for that, I got to team up with Max Boltman, which was great because he knows the ins and outs so well, and just get those two different perspectives together. But yeah, like a lot of it is, I try at least once a week to just zoom through all the different resources out there, whether it's going through all three zones and seeing if anything stands out in a good or bad way, or evolving hockey, and just start looking at certain things. I have like patterns I try to keep up with, so I know if something looks like remarkably different, and then that might be my focus. It sometimes just comes from something super simple. Like, that is my favorite thing. The Rangers are spiraling out of control in November and December. I'm watching them a lot. I see Ryan Lindgren struggling, and I'm curious as to why. I don't know the answer. And I go, well, I want to explore that. And I pitch it, and it, if it's not getting written about, I can do it. So there's a lot of creative freedom in there, which I absolutely love, that I get to just bounce around and do whatever, as long as it doesn't conflict with someone else. And sometimes if it does, it might turn into a collaboration, or it might turn into someone else doing it, and then you learn something from it, and there might be a follow-up to do.
When I read articles through The Athletic, I feel like you can sort of see, I said the word handprints, fingerprints, whatever earlier, and I feel like there's a lot of that, a lot of you, a lot of Dom that sort of spills its way into a piece. Maybe it's you don't even have a specific writing credit, but so many of the pieces that I read, it's a very data-informed community, in my opinion. Lots of numbers that are linked and lots of charts and stuff like that, which is super important and something I'm super passionate about. So now I think we're gonna move this conversation a little bit more into kind of the specific data space. So hockey is a wacky sport. It's a very, very weird sport. There's a lot going on, a lot of randomness, very, very difficult to replicate things in hockey. And there's a lot of stuff you can count, There's a lot of different things going on that you can count to try and turn into digestible data that tells something interesting. And why don't you maybe start by talking a little bit just kind of about maybe the current state of where we're at with just numbers in general in hockey. There are a lot of really easy counting stats that have been around forever that, you know, a lot of people who, even if they're the most casual hockey observer in the world, they know that we count goals and points and stuff like that. But then there's a lot more to it. So why don't you just kind of give us an early preamble on the data space in hockey?
It's okay. I mean, like, okay, compared to where we were a couple years ago, it's better. But compared to other sports leagues, it really pales in comparison. You see, basketball has way more information. Soccer is filled with it. Tennis has a ton of, analytics. There's all different sports that they have this. I wish hockey had more. We use a lot of publicly available information to kind of spin out from. And it's great and wonderful. I do think we are kind of reaching our breaking point with some of it. Like, yes, we have expected goals and everybody is so good with it. Now having the data tracking, there's a little more consistency in how shots are tracked, which is going to help the information that everyone's spinning out from those, shot locations. But it would help to have things like, pre-shot movement and having that passing information. So I'm hoping we get there. We're not there yet, but what helps is there are so many, first of all, unbelievably smart creators out there who are taking this information and using it in such a brilliant way, right? You look around Hockey Viz, Evolving Hockey, Money Puck, Dom, everybody knows Dom's model from The Athletic, right? Like he uses numbers in a unique way, and using game score for hockey is a different way to do it. So, and now you can find a lot of the information on hockey stat cards. Like that is great. And then we have All Three Zones, which is manual tracking of the games to help fill in the information that we're missing in that public sphere as it is. So there is a lot of information out there. There definitely could be a lot more information, but I think that there are a lot of creative ways to use it.
How did you become passionate about this space and interested in this space?
I think every single person in this space probably has a story where they wanted to prove someone wrong. And that was the case for me. I knew of it and I skimmed things to that point and I had read a lot to that point, but the real thing that got me like deep in it was Anton Strowman and trying to prove that he was actually good because he played a style that wasn't flashy. And if you just, just watched him, you might not notice anything because when you're talking about defense, it's limiting things from happening, right? And then when there's a goal against, what do? You look to see who the defensemen are on the ice. And back then, there was a lot of shot blocking by the Rangers and snow angels out there. So that's what would catch your attention versus the fact that they stopped something from happening in the first place. I think I got really deep on like war on ice using their data and charts to prove my point. And it just kind of spiraled from there, just reading about it. And then a couple years later, I was writing about like sports technology and I got to talk to people how they use data. And it was just all different voices from the space that, we all still use their information today, getting to know it a little bit better, how they make their models, why they do it the way they did. And that helped me get a lot deeper into it. And then as I started writing, like I had read everybody's work out there that, you could get a gist of how to use this information. I just wanted to try it for myself.
I feel like there's a really weird, I don't know. I think in graphs. That's how my brain works. And I feel like there's a bell curve sort of thing where there's so many people on both sides where you have the fans and maybe even some of the players, teams, decision makers and stuff like that, where people are like, they are intimidated and they are frankly offended by the development of some of these really cool numbers and these ways of looking at the game outside of just observing and trusting your own observations and your own opinions on things. And I feel like there's a middle intersection where people like you exist, where you say, hey, what if XYZ? And then fans are like, I know what I'm talking about. You can't say anything. My eye test. Sorry, just give me a second, is, says all these different things. And then you also have players and coaches and people who exist in the actual sphere of what's going on in the game who are also a little bit, apprehensive about the whole thing and not super interested. So you kind of feel like you're fighting a losing battle sometimes. Why do you think people are averse to the developments of some of these sorts of things and averse to numbers that are trying to explain things and predict things?
I think some of it is people see it as like math. And like, yes, it is to an extent, but if you're not the one working with the data, you don't really have to do math. Like for me, I love getting to do the math. That's part of why I like it. If you're building a model, you are probably using math and formulas and algorithms, right? If you just want to look at a scoring chance chart, right? To be like, who was good tonight? You don't have to do math. If you can look at hit counts and shots on goal and time on ice, you can look at a lot of this information. Some of it, I think the barriers are in the name, right? You hear Corsi, so you roll your eyes. But if you heard a coach say pucks on net, you would not think anything of it. And when you talk about Corsi, you're just trying to see all of the shot attempts because they all matter, not just the ones that go on net. And then if they aren't going on net, you should try to figure out why. If you're a coach and you see your team has 50 shot attempts, but only 20 are going on net, you want to know what that difference is in the 30. You might be saying you are missing your shots every single time, or they're getting blocked along the way. It's going to teach you something. It's going to help you do it. So I think everybody gets so bogged down by the name Corsi when it's just as simple as shot attempts or expected goals. Why not actual goals? Well, goaltenders, they matter. Shooting ability, that matters. But it's if it's simplified, it's right there. Everybody wants to cite their eye test. Yes, you were watching the game. We are all inherently biased. We are incredibly biased that we see the dramatically good and the dramatically bad, and we're going to remember that more than everything in between. Plus, some things that you're measuring, you can't count. You are not manually tracking in your head, maybe if you have a notebook, but in your head going, oh, I know that they entered the zone 7 out of 7 times with possession. You're probably not doing that. If you are, I am so impressed by you. But like, let's be realistic here. So it helps to have something that you're seeing confirm it, or if it's completely opposite, make you question what you were missing along the way. I think a million years ago, I wrote a story about Neil Pionk when he was with the Rangers, and he had just scored an end-to-end goal and got so much hype for it because these scoring plays were gorgeous, but something just didn't add up. And figuring out the difference between the numbers, which were god-awful, and the eye test was, like one of the best things that I think it taught me a lot, and it taught me a lot about him as a player because you're looking at it going, well, he's being used in the wrong role and he's being used in these tough defensive minutes that he's just not built to do. And look at how much he's on the ice for. You're not remembering that because at the end of the game, you're remembering that highlight reel goal. And there is nothing wrong with it. It's just what our brains go to. So I think everyone can be quick to just shun it because they don't understand it. And maybe they don't want to understand it, but it's something that I think makes you a more educated fan. And listen, not every fan needs to care about it. I think that's the biggest thing too, is understanding like not everyone needs to care about this. Players don't need to care about it. It's nice when they do, right? Because I think you're a better player. You can become a better player if you learn a little bit more about your game, maybe more about scouting the opponents. But it's for decision makers in hockey. They should be the ones to understand it and, people talking about the game. But if you just want to sit down, have a beer, and watch a game, no one's going to judge you either.
Yeah, I think there's a huge difference between not caring about it and thinking it's not real, right? Because I think that's the part that frustrates me is, yeah, you have people who are like, this is not interesting to me. I don't particularly care. That's totally fine. But if you go and try and discredit it, it's like, okay, that's where we have a little bit of a difference here. And I think one thing that really bothers me is just this whole concept of eye test. It's my least favorite term in hockey because the word test to me kind of insinuates that there's some form of criteria or structure or whatever to it, when it's frankly just observations, which are different among everyone. Not all eye tests or whatever you want to call it are created equal. Like you said, we look for different things and we observe different things. So, on the fan side, what do you think is kind of a next step per se into, yeah, not everyone's going to care about it, and that's okay. Like, I agree with that. It is what it is. But making people a little bit less offended by it, making people a little bit more open to the existence of the thing, as opposed to just, caring about it too much, but that they'll be okay with it.
I think a lot of it has to do with the delivery. There are some fans who are never going to care about it, and they're always going to hate it, and they can be closed-minded all they want. But I think for the most part, for like the general fans, it needs to be delivered in a way that you're not jamming numbers down someone's throat. Understanding the data is one huge step in the whole thing. Understanding how to explain it to other people, I think, is an even bigger challenge sometimes because there are writers out there who might not be watching games and just pull the numbers to talk about something. And I think that is in bad faith. I think it's bad in every which way. It's bad for the nerd. It's like a bad look for the nerds because most of us are not doing that, right? Like, we're watching games and then using the numbers to supplement it, right? Or be the starting point and then you go from there. Just like, People get really upset when you cite a model. The model is the jumping off point. It is not everything. It is not the end all be all, but it is the best starting point. And I think it needs to be prefaced as much to kind of get that push and pull from fans who might not want to like love this in the first place. I think that there's a way to deliver it because the way you phrase it in a sentence, you're not going to say, well, this player has a Corsi 4 of 50%. Like it doesn't, you probably shouldn't in today's game. I think that we're all kind of like advancing past that point, right? That there's a way to say, you know, the Jets are breaking even with this player on the ice. Just saying it that way, I feel like it like smooths it out in a way that it's a little bit more inviting. But if you have complicated concepts in your story and you can't explain them properly, then you have no business writing them. And I look at someone like Allison Lucan. She is one of the best around, and not just doing database journalism, but explaining it and explaining how to do it. When you read her stories, if she has a different concept, like a response goal, there is a definition for it. If there is a chart in that story, a heat map, she is telling you how to read it and what you should take away from it. It's not coming in place of a paragraph. It's there to enhance the story and give you a better way of looking at things. And when there's video in there, and there tends to be, she's explaining a play and might be saying, you know, this team is struggling on the power play to enter the zone on the left side of the ice. Here are 10 videos that might go with it, right? Here's something that shows the point that she's talking about. I think that using video is the best way to use numbers. I think that they're a perfect match in conjunction. I don't think you need video, but I think it really helps because it's a way to explain to fans who might not understand something and bridge that gap, right? From this is what you're seeing and this is what it means on paper. And this is why we care about it. So the delivery might be the most important way to get new people into this.
I think something that was, I remember hearing it, I feel like for the first time when I was in school and maybe overachieving in a particular subject. And they're like, well, actually, if you really want to know if you understand it or not, teach the other kids in your, yep, in your class about it. And if you can't, you actually don't understand it very well. And that was huge. If you can't explain it to me like I'm five, you don't understand it yourself as well as you probably think you do. And I feel like maybe that's a little bit dramatic, but I think the principle of the thing still stands when it comes to the use of those sorts of things. And it's a pet peeve of mine when, you know, someone will post something about Corsi numbers for a player to try and maybe push a narrative of one type, but you know that that player is a high shot volume player to begin with. And you're like, well, that's actually not speaking to the argument at hand, which was about something a little bit more qualitative as opposed to quantitative. And can you speak a little bit to that kind of context? Because that's something that I mentioned it to you before we started recording, and it's something that's so important to me, is that we're in this weird time of people wanting to be the middleman and be the peacekeeper. That's like, hey guys, we can care about observations, we can care about data. Neither of them are the be-all end-all. But I get frustrated because data not being the be-all end-all is not necessarily true. All these numbers are things that actually did happen. It's just, why should you care about them? In what context should you care about them? In what particular instance should you care about them? And can you speak a bit to kind of that context and that piece around it?
Well, having context is the most important part of it, right? Because if you're going to say something like, I'm trying to think of like a good example of a player, but like Quinton Byfield, right? He's playing center this year. And you might be talking about his minutes and you want to say something like, it might help to talk about his role and his usage. The fact that he's playing center this year and not wing is a difference for him. The fact that he's not playing with Anze Kopitar, he is in sheltered minutes because Anze Kopitar is playing those matchup minutes. It works for him, right? So if you're saying his numbers are outstanding, it does help to have the context around it because you're not just trying to say, well, Kopitar, you know, only had a 52% expected goals rate and Quinton Byfield had a 70%. Those numbers are both important, but you have to acknowledge the difference of it. Say you're playing a team like the Oilers and Byfield is matching up to Adam Henrique while Anze Kopitar is tasked with shutting down Leon Draisaitl. Like, there is a huge difference there. So I think that's important. Obviously, in a quick tweet, you're not going to be able to fill in all that information all the time, right? If you just want to put out a quick note and be like, look what an amazing night Sidney Crosby had. He had one goal, one assist, 8 shot attempts, 5 of which were scoring chances, an expected goal rate of X, a shot advantage in his minutes of X. You can totally do that. You don't have to be like, but he also played against XYZ. Like, that doesn't necessarily matter in that context. But if you want to, like, paint the picture and explain something and make a point, I think sometimes the context is important to find a way to note and build what you're talking about instead of just putting something out there in bad faith, which happens all the time, right? So I think intention definitely matters a lot. And sometimes people don't intend for things to just be out there to like start some sort of like mess, but like it totally happens. So you want to be using numbers in a way not just to fill a narrative, right? Like if you're you might think the Oilers power play is lights out this last month, right? And it's way better than it was in the beginning of the season, and you think that way, and then you want to find the numbers to back it up. That's one thing. But when you go into going like, I know this, and I'm going to find the numbers to prove the point, I feel like there's a little bit of a difference there because you're searching for something to back up your narrative instead of asking a question and using the numbers to solve it, or seeing a number and now trying to back it up by going back and watching the tape to go, okay, what am I seeing? Like, how is this happening? So I just think that's important. But I think that's important with anything, right? If you're looking at hit count on a given night and you see that the hits are 35 to 40, some like crazy physical game, that's important to have, but like, were the hits valuable? Like there are more questions to ask, even with the most basic numbers. How many times did possession change when a hit was made? How many times did a player not go in the corner because a hit was made? You know, there are ways to do it. Was it an effective hit? Like, I wish we had a way to track it, but we don't. So we kind of have to put in a lot more legwork to do things. And I know that can be a headache for some people, but like, I think every single number is out there. There's a bigger story than just the single number. And maybe sometimes, like, a spade is a spade, and playing 25 minutes a game is playing 25 minutes a game, but it might matter. You might look at it and go, well, how, what's the strength of the rest of their blue line that they're able to put this player out for these minutes? Why are they in this usage?
How do you not drive yourself crazy? Because I feel like, you know, you can look at a specific number, and like you said, you could look at any specific thing and generate some form of key takeaway for it to communicate, like you said, in a tweet, in an article, whatever. But I feel like there's so many but actuallys that you can use to build into it because of how much hockey revolves around the preceding plays, the opponents and their preceding plays, and the goaltending, and so many different things. Like, how do you balance, you know, looking for all of that additional context and asking all those additional questions, but not losing kind of the intended end goal there? Because I feel like there's a crazy gray area that you could just drown in if you let yourself.
Well, I make myself crazy with all of this. This is
You're
why I
like, oh,
am the way I
that's
am.
assuming that I'm not crazy, but I am.
No, I am. And the way I look at things completely is it's, you know, a long process for everything. But no, like sometimes it depends how much you care about something, right? Like you can watch a game and not care about any of it and just enjoy it, and that's totally fine. But if you want to put out some like if you want to go like go grandstanding and put something out there, like I think you should do the work to back it up. Right, because I think that there are people who are doing it in good faith. Sometimes it sparks a conversation. I think that's the best one, right? Like when you put something out there and you might be talking about, I don't know, a player having a good night, like it could go 20 different ways. And maybe someone's question is going to make you think about it in a different way because you don't have to like think of every single outcome. And like, you know, the Charlie Day meme where he's like standing there with the board with all the ropes connected. Like, you don't
Pepe
have to do
Silvio,
that.
what's the thing? It's that's the episode in the mailroom.
Yeah, like you don't need to go into it like doing that, right? Like if you want to look up how Josh Morrissey's night was, like go off. You don't have to. But I just think it helps. Like it depends what your intentions are behind it. Like what are you trying to talk about? What are you trying to explain? And why are you doing it? But I think the best thing is like there are different opinions. People are going to see things different ways, and people are going to translate different numbers different ways. And I think that's what makes it so interesting and exciting because there's a ton of ways to look at things, and hopefully something will teach you something new or teach you a different way to approach things, right? Because I know like I might look at something one way and someone else is going to have a different opinion, and now you're going to think about it totally different. And maybe it won't affect your opinion. Maybe you're going to be like, well, that's a bad point, but why? So if you can get something out of it, I think that's a good thing. And if you're helping other people understand things along the way, why not?
When it comes to your, you know, specifically like written publications and stuff like that, where it is so important to factor in all these details that we've spoken about, and probably, if I had to guess, like 1.5 million more, because there's so many considerations and stuff. Let's specifically talk about, you know, numbers, charts, all that sort of stuff, and video as well. Is there any particular, I don't know if I want to call it like a rule of thumb, formula is a little bit too scientific, but ways that you try and, you know, you found have been successful in trying to communicate a point, whether it's layering video, chart, video, or like, you know, explaining a point verbally first and then saying, if you need supplementary information, like you said with the Allison Lucan thing, here are some examples. Is there any specific way that you found has, you know, resonated well with your particular audience in trying to communicate maybe some more complex points?
I think video has been the best thing. Because I think that's the best way to draw in the traditional fan too, is to now explain it one way and show the video to back it up. And I think it helps you like translate your point better. If you're talking about a team on the power play and you're trying to say that if you're shooting the puck from the left circle, it is 10 times more dangerous of a shot if you are getting a pass from the right circle and it's a quick one-timer versus something from the point because of how a goaltender reacts to it and the time that they're going to have to react from a point pass from a lateral pass, right? If you have the video comparing them, right, and you show that, and you show how a goalie has to reset themselves, and this player scores a goal and this one it doesn't. Obviously, like, you don't want to be cherry picking to prove a point, but like, there's something there. There's data to back it up, and there's something there. And now let me show you it. I think the video should come second to what you are explaining, and it backs up what you're explaining. But sometimes you might want to show it first and be like, take this example, and then you break it down. It could be as simple as that. I think one of the biggest challenges is finding a way to be like formal but informal enough in the way that you explain things because you want it to be like inviting and you want it to have that like casual tone while explaining a play because I think that invites people into reading it a little bit more. But I think it helps to break up text in general, but you don't want to do it just for the sake of breaking up text. I wrote a story that went up today. It had no charts in it. It's very unlike me. It had zero charts. It had zero video. It didn't need it. I did page breaks instead just to give it a little bit of space where it felt like it needed that separation, which helps it organize it, you know, for my purposes as well. But as I'm writing, sometimes I'll go through and, you know, you give it another read and you're like, you know what? This point could use a little bit more emphasis. Let me do this. Maybe you have a whole paragraph where you're trying to break down numbers and you're like, this is overwhelming. So you might want just a clear chart, like just a simple table. Breaking down the number of scoring chances each player was on the ice for. Something as simple as that, right? Like, it might help you. Sometimes you want to compare things. Say, I wrote about Chris Kreider a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to explain how he wasn't generating as much in transition. I have the video to show here's what he did last year, and here's how he's getting to the middle of the ice, and here's how he's, you know, getting stuck to the outside off the rush. But also, from all three zones, they have yearly comparisons. You go, you know what? This is going to help. And I think it's great to use those as your starting point. Explain what you're showing. For me, it's as simple as in that case, I'm gonna circle his name on it. So I'm emphasizing what we're talking about in this situation. Sometimes you feel a heat map might be best if you're trying to explain where a team generates offense from. I think those are fantastic. I use them from HockeyViz all of the time. You just add a simple note and say, and in this situation, shot suppression is represented in blue. Something as simple as that will it helps make your point instead of people looking at that, rolling their eyes, and all of a sudden they don't want to read it anymore, right? They're like, this is word salad to me, I don't get it. So I think that you just have to find that balance. There are times where charts are appropriate, there are times when they're overkill or they're more confusing than they should be. And learning that it is tough and it always helps to have someone to bounce something around. I know I can send something to Allison or Dom at any point and go, do you get that? But they're also nerds. There are times I can send something to my editor who's not as deep as in hockey analytics or even to one of my friends who's a huge hockey fan, but maybe not as deep into data as me and go, does this make sense to you? You know, here's the context around it. Does this make sense to you? And I think having that as a vibe check definitely helps make your work stronger.
How do you speak to different audiences about those sorts of things? Because you're right. If you wanted to talk to Allison or Dom about a specific thing, like you could really dive into certain things and you could throw a chart and not explain it because you know that they get it and all those sorts of things. And then you have the person who thinks even plus minus is too complicated of a statistic. And then every single other hockey fan falls in the middle somewhere. Like, are there different tactics or different, you know, strategies you use to try and speak to different audiences about complicated topics?
I think just knowing where you're putting something helps too. Like if you're tweeting it out versus sending like a quick text, that matters. But also like if I'm sending something to Allison that I want to work in a story, like I'm gonna explain what I'm doing too, because otherwise it's just a chart out of context. You know, like you want to have some sort of detail and explain it in a way, because if she says to you that doesn't make sense, then you know it does not make sense. It helps to bounce things around, but you learn as you go. Like, I know sometimes looking at the comments are a total cesspool, but like, I try to do it with my stories because I know I'm using concepts that maybe the average fan doesn't understand. And you might get a comment that says something like, I don't know what that chart means, and you can explain it. Or you didn't explain it clear enough. Now you know for the future to have it. Like, that kind of feedback, I think really does matter. So it's something important. Someone might just have a follow-up question like, hey, that's really interesting about penalty kills. Like, did anyone else do anything on it? And you're like, yep, this is where I learned it from. I think just, you know, you learn as you go. Because I know for me, my writing was 10 times more stiff when I started out. Because again, I don't have that journalistic background. To that point, like writing experience came from like AP literature. Of course, it was going to be like snooty and crappy. Like it was not in a way that you want to explain it. But the biggest thing is like reading how other people do it. I read Dom stories and I know that's Dom's story just from the tone. And there are some things, you know, we work a lot with Sean Gentile, who isn't as big of a nerd as us, to be like, does that make sense? Or read how he might explain it. Like we work on the previews together and we're all doing the same sections in our own way and trying to make it a cohesive voice. But I think sometimes, especially for the three of us, we can go in and see who wrote what and we know it. Just seeing how he might explain the same information that we are using, it's all in one big spreadsheet that we're, you know, sharing. It teaches you a different way to approach it, and I think that really helps.
If we're talking in terms of people who may be listening to this sort of episode who are public communicators, let's call it, so people who are aspiring to maybe be journalists, maybe be content creators, maybe work in broadcasting and things like that, do you have any particular tips or suggestions or visions for how, you know, you want the space to continue to grow in terms of how people can use these sorts of things, these analytics, these videos, these charts, to build more impactful arguments is the word I want to use, but arguments doesn't need to necessarily insinuate that you're trying to fight someone about something. You're just trying to make a point. You're just trying to bring some information forward in a more impactful way that has a little bit more substance. Do you have any particular kind of tips and tricks for people who may be looking to grow in that area?
Consume every single thing you can. Like, that is definitely first and foremost. It helps to watch a hockey broadcast and see during the intermission they might be talking about expected goals. See how they do it. And whether or not you like it, I think you can learn from it. Do you understand it? When someone's breaking down a certain play, do you wish they went into more detail on something? Take notes of that because maybe you can do that. Maybe you can fill the gap that they're missing. Read everything. I do not care if you are only a Calgary Flames fan, read the Oilers writer because they might have a point. They might make you think about something in a different way. They might provide more context around the league that's going to help you learn it, but you might just see the way that they present it and take notes from it. I think that's the best advice. The other part of it is ask questions. I have felt like an idiot so many times not understanding something. Ask questions. If I can't explain it and I don't understand it, I can't explain it to other people. I know I have been in Micah's DMs 3,000 times going on Hockey Viz going, I don't know how to explain this. Or can I send you the, can you just read this one line? Am I explaining this adequately? Is this stat in there? Did you use quality of competition in here? And just trying to ask. I am always asking Dom these questions because it, you know, I'm being asked the same things from other writers, right? Like we are constantly getting questions. Do you have a player card for this? Or can you read this line? Or does this make sense? Or do you know where to find this? If I can't explain it myself and I am not clear on what it means, it's going to translate that way. So asking questions is so important. Yes, you're going to feel like an idiot. Get over it. That's the only way we're all going to get better at this. Because I think the people who are the model builders too are the people who have something that's more advanced that you have to be asking a question on, have to be able to under explain it too. And it's going to help them, I think, or maybe think about a different point. You might want to know why didn't you include this, right? There's so many like player cards out there and quick snapshots, and those are great and wonderful. But everybody uses them in their own way. Everyone has an expected goal model, and it's used in a different way. To understand the differences in what you're using, I think is so important, and it's going to make you better because you might want to know, like last year in Calgary, Jacob Markstrom's numbers looked really good on Evolving Hockey, and everybody had him top three in goals saved above expected, but you wanted to know why it was better. So I asked Luke and Josh, and I said, like, what's happening here? And they looked into it, and they were like, well, part of the reason is our model can, you know, do shots that they give more value to shots that are within, you know, 10 seconds of a giveaway or takeaway. So if it's a quick play like that, and the Flames, there were a lot of defensive breakdowns last year, he's going to get more credit for it. So now you just learn something about his game, and you learn something about their model, and now you can explain what that difference is because, you know, some people might look site to site to site and go, well, this is the most favorable number, let me use it. I just think that there's something to learn in everything. And I know that might sound really lame, but it is because hockey is such a weird sport. This is a sport where people are skating around on a very slippery surface with knives on their boots, shooting pucks at 100 miles per hour and slamming into each other on the boards. Things happen. There are divots in the ice. Things slip and slide. It happens, right? And then before you get into the things like goaltending ability and shooting ability, hockey at its core is an unpredictable game, and we're trying to predict the unpredictable. Sometimes you need a ton of luck, right? Like, you don't just have to be good, you have to be lucky. So, you have to try to figure out everything And then you can kind of decipher what is the luck that a team has, like the Vancouver Canucks last year, like the Seattle Kraken the year before that. So just asking questions and understanding the concepts and then watching it and seeing how it does or doesn't make sense is going to make you better.
I think it's so important when, learning, it's all about, like you said, watching everything, reading everything. And I think some people think that by the nature of saying that you're saying everyone is so good, always learn from people and adopt everything that you see. Learning is also finding out what you don't like and what you disagree with and everything. And I think it's the Jay Fresh of it all, right? Where it's like, I don't know, specific numbers on this card. Maybe I disagree with how they're calculated or anything like that, but there's no denying the fact that this card speaks to people in a way that so few other things do, because blue equals good and red equals bad, and we understand that. We understand percentages. We understand, what even strength defense could in some context be referring to. We have a general idea of what that means, and I think you can, take bits and pieces of good and bad from everybody's work. And bad doesn't necessarily have to mean that, they're horrible at what they do or something. You could just have more questions about it or anything like that. And I think there's so many different ways to look at those sorts of things. And that, I think, brings us to basically the end of the episode, kind of the last question I have for you. Oh my gosh, I can't believe this is the last time in this season that I'm going to be asking this question, but I really just want to know what kind of your parting gift is for everyone, your piece of advice. If people are looking to tell more compelling stories with data in hockey, specifically on ice analytics, which is what we've been talking about today, what would kind of be your key insight that you want them to walk away from this episode with?
Just use everything. There's so much at your disposal. And it's as simple as the video, right? Throw the word eye test in the trash. Talk about watching video and tape and go through it and just ask questions on everything. Like to yourself, to other people. Go through what you, like you said, like what you do and you don't like and figure it out and figure out your own path. I think that there is so much content in the hockey sphere. There could be so much more. We are so far behind the other major sports. There's so much room for new voices and new ideas, and I think it's always a good thing. And yes, it can be super discouraging sometimes in this sport, especially if you're not, I don't know, a white man doing it. And I know men get so offended when they hear that, but like it's the truth. It's not the most inviting sport. If you love it, keep doing it because, I think a lot of the times people's work speaks for themselves, the way people conduct themselves speaks for themselves. So there are ways to like carve out your own space and role for what makes sense to you, because maybe, just like a player on the ice, you might just be like a third line specialty person. Like I don't think I'm some like elite first liner. I'd be like, yeah, I'm a utility player. I think I can do a little bit of everything and work my ass off on the third line. And that might be your role. You might be someone that is a systems expert. Go with it. There is so much more room for that, right? Like, I just think, put in the work and read everything and make good relationships, and you will carve out some sort of role for yourself in this space.
I love that. And I actually, it's so funny, the very first episode of the season here, I talked with Annie O'Donnell, who's an influencer in hockey, who's incredible. And that was kind of the parting words. We had very, very different conversations, very different subjects, but just kind of, there is space for you in this industry is a really common thread that started kind of bookends this whole season, right? And it ran its way through here as well, that, work hard and know that there's a place for you, and we are excited for you to be here. And I think that's such a nice way to end the season. Shayna, thank you so much for joining me. I think this has been so fun. I am super dialed. I'm like, I have so many more things I want to talk about, but in the interest of time, we can only get into so much. But this has been so incredible. Everyone who has tuned in, not just today, but every other day over the course of these last few months of listening to these episodes, thank you so much. Make sure you hit the follow, the subscribe, the like, and all that fun stuff on the way out. And if you haven't checked out all of the other episodes in the season, please do so. This has been such an incredible journey. This has been so fun. And I'm so glad I got to kind of finish off this journey with you, Shayna. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me and for doing this. I love this whole series. I think it's so great because, again, there was the space for it. And, like, not everything is for everyone, right? Like, if you don't like something, that's totally okay. But I love that there is this space, like, opening the door for more people. So you can hear all different voices and opinions and like figure out what works for you. I love it.
More diverse opinions you get, the more fun, the more informed a space is going to get. So I definitely appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate everyone who's given me support, just like you have kind of along this journey. So thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in, and we will see you hopefully next time.